This is tape number 5 from the Book of Grace, Ram Dass's program at the Upland Hills Ecological Awareness Center, and it took place on February 15th and 16th, 1997.
I want to say to everybody that I really am honored to be part of the Ecological Awareness Center, because in communities, it's at the actual grassroots level where groups of people get together to find a way to resonate with the truth they know in their deeper hearts and act out of that place. That is really the germ of that shift of collective consciousness. And when I looked at the presidential elections and saw the level of consciousness that was in the political arena, and I realized that these supposedly represent us, I realized that there was a very healthy, unspoken group of people who represented a shift of consciousness, and yet had not been ready to stand forward and to be what they are. And so, what I now see in organizations like the Ecological Awareness Center is the kind of natural coming together of people who are looking for the integration of spirit and action, and to act in a way that is honorable to their deepest truth. And this is hard work. It's a hard game, but it's a very exciting game. It's a bootstraps operation for a group of people to try to become more conscious together, using each other to help each other. And I feel that it has to start that honestly at the level of one human being with another. But what interests me is watching my own audiences over 20, 30 years now, of seeing me speaking to the choir of one sort, and then 20 years later speaking to a cross-broad section of people, and in which we are hearing one another, in which I'm using metaphors that 20 years earlier very few people would have been able to hear, and the audience is going like this. And what I realize is that consciousness mainstreams, things become collective consciousness. And I really do see that the way the cellular structure builds of things like this group here and this moment together here, and then watch this happen. And what I now see is this incredible resonance. And as I told the group yesterday, I'm about to start a new career. I'm going to start a national radio call-in talk show, like Rush Limbaugh does in Limbaugh. It's called Talk Radio with Heart. And the show is called Here and Now. And the reason I'm doing it, for a lot of reasons, one is I'm doing it to earn a living, probably. One of it, I'm doing it because I don't want to travel so much. And one of it is that I'm doing it because it feels like that large group of people whose hearts resonate with one another, it's great to have a place to hang out together. And I wanted to create the radio show. It was like hang out at the Satsang Saloon or something like that. You know, hang out at a place where we can all sort of say it's all right to be conscious for a moment and to be collaborative, to have fun and to enjoy ourselves. And I don't know about all the stuff about movements and stuff in terms of the approaching millennium. But I would say there was this interesting study that was done by Paul Ray. And he did it financed by Noetics Institute, which is in California, which was started by the astronaut Edgar Mitchell. And the Fetzer Foundation, which you probably know about since it's here in Kalamazoo. In fact, you know, it's just, I'll tell you about Paul Ray's study in a second. I just think it's very funny that I'm here. When SAVA started in Chelsea, Michigan, that was in 79, so I was then in that place as a very central place of my heart and action for years. And now I'm very involved with the Fetzer Foundation, which is in Kalamazoo. And it's interesting to find the combination of the cultures of cultures of compassion, caring compassion, spiritual awareness, and also people who are very grounded. Grounded. They remember their zip code. It's not like where I live, out in La La Land. Well, this study by Paul Ray was done for Fetzer and Noetics. And it was a study that looked at the values and attitudes of a large population. And what he arrived at was seeing our population divided into three groups. And that's obviously not pure, and it's obviously a lot of the experimenter in it, but he did do a sampling, and these groups did show up statistically as different. And one group he called the traditionalists. He described them as heartlanders, who would like to have everything go back to sort of the way it was in the 30s and 40s. And say, reassert certain old values and styles. And they were, I don't know, 29%, 37%. And then there were the modernists. They are the people who, since the Age of Enlightenment, have been reasonable. And the modernists are science and technology and philosophical materialism and all that good stuff. And they have, there's a lot of them. 24% are these third group. And the others divide almost equally, with the traditionalists having less than the modernists. Okay, the third group are the, oh, here it is. The heartlanders are 29%. The modernists were 47%. That's a lot more of the population. And these new group, what he called the cultural creatives, comprise 24% of the adult population. Thus, he would say they'd be about 44 million of them. It's a large segment of this population. And he said of those, he would divide them into the green group, exclusive, and the green plus spirit group, which is interesting. And that divided this group right down the middle, so there were 22, roughly 22 million in each group, because there were people that were primarily concerned with the environment and weren't any different from the rest of the population in terms of their these other values, which I'm about to. This new subculture includes people who perceive all too clearly the systemic problems of today, all the way from the local level to the national and to the planetary. Includes people who have high standards for spirituality, personal development, authenticity, relationships, and toleration for the views of other people. Okay. They come out of the transcendental movement, basically. And there's one more description of them. Values of the cultural creatives. The distinctive values, commitments, and beliefs of the cultural creatives, the most conspicuous representatives of this emerging integral culture, may be summarized as follows. One, ecological sustainability, beyond environmentalism. If you can name an aspect of ecology and sustainability, they are emphatically for it and are leading the way. Cultural creatives demonstrate awareness of a large range of issues, including wanting to rebuild neighborhoods and communities, ecological sustainability and limits to growth, seeing nature as sacred, wanting to stop polluters, being anti-big business, wanting voluntary simplicity, being willing to pay to clean up the environment and to stop global warming. In terms of globalism, two of the top values for cultural creatives are xenophilism, which means love of travel to foreign places, of foreigners and of the exotic, and ecological sustainability, which strongly includes concern for the planetary ecology and stewardship and population problems. Three, feminism, women's issues, relationships, family. The fact that the cultural creatives are 60% women, interesting, is a major key to understanding this subculture. Much of the focus on women's issues in politics comes from them, including concerns about violence and abuse of women and children, desire to rebuild neighborhoods and community, desire to improve caring relationships, and concerns about family, though they are no more family-oriented than most North Americans. It is near to the top of their list of values. And there's two more topics. Altruism, self-actualization, alternative health care. Spirituality and spiritual psychology, that's all one thing. This is a complex of highly interrelated beliefs and values centered on the inner life. In reality, this is a new sense of the sacred that incorporates personal growth psychology and the spiritual and service to others as all one orientation. Right on. It also includes a stronger trend towards holistic health and alternative health care as part of this complex. Can you hear this, by the way? Because this is really interesting, because what I'm saying to you is, if you wondered who you are and where you are, this is one of the templates that may help you find out you're part of something other than what you thought you were. Okay. In other words, it's giving you a new frame of reference that might help you acknowledge other parts of yourself and keep moving forward, if you want to go forward, if you think it's forward. Well-developed social conscience and social optimism. That's the last category. Contrary to some social critics, an emphasis on the personal does not exclude the political or social conscience, though individuals may focus on them in sequence. Cultural creatives are engaged in the world just as much as in personal and spiritual issues. Rebuilding and healing society is related to healing ourselves physically and spiritually. With that goes a guarded social optimism. So I say to the radio syndicators, well, I think I have a potentially large audience out there. And they say, yes, who? And I say, cultural creatives. I said, there's 44 million of them out there, if I can pick up the straight environmentalists. And their faces go blank, because this group doesn't even exist in business consciousness, but primarily, doesn't even exist. It's like being a secret, a group that just knows itself through the way it is. Gandhi said that incredible thing once that has really, I've played with for years, I work with all the time. You probably don't know it. He was on a train and it was leaving a station, and a reporter rushed up next to the window of the train and ran alongside, as you do in India, next to the window of the train, and asked Gandhi for statement so that he personally could take back to his village. And Gandhi picked up a sandwich bag, and he scribbled on it and he handed it out the window as the train picked up speed. And what he had scribbled was, my life is my message. And I've thought about that, about what does it mean to say my life is my message? It means I am living with integrity with the way I think things are true. And I've learned, I've watched us use, like, in terms of message, forget what the real essence of a message is. Like, to say the word love when your heart is closed is very different than transmitting the quality of love. And when I come down to it, I see the dance as between love and fear. And I see that fear leads you to contract, it leads you to go into your mind, it leads you to become more prejudiced, it leads you to become more violent. Out of fear for the survival of yourself and your loved one. And the other one is the quality of love. And love is embracing. It's embracing. Because it sees in everybody all of it. Now, that appreciation that you are only in connection with the beloved is the practice of devotional yoga, basically. It's making love with the beloved through living life. So the interesting question as an exercise when you're doing that practice is, who do you see when you look at another person? Do you see their body and their face? See their physical form? Is that what you focus on? And you say that person is old or young or fat or thin or dark or light or big or little or... You focus on the psychodynamics of the person. Do you say that person is important, that person is happy, that person is rich, that person is needful, that person is neurotic. That person wants something from me. That person is giving something to me. Keep shifting your receiver here for another moment. Maybe you see other people in terms of their astral identity. What Jung calls their archetypes, or the astral identities of being an Aries or a Libra or a Sagittarius. And you see people in sort of their larger than life size games. You say, there's an Earth Mother. No, my name is Harriet. Yes, but you're an Earth Mother. See, it's levels. It's just levels. But you can shift the gear again, and you look at another person anywhere in the world, any time, any moment, and you're looking at them, just being present, and in them is a being that is just being present, and when they are ready, and when it's appropriate, that shutter opens and the two of you are hanging out together. Are you in there? I'm in here, far out. How did you get into that one? And you look at somebody and you see that their body and their personality and their astral identity and all their unique individual differences are all like this jacket. They're all the stuff they're wearing. And you, hello in there. And what you're meeting is the soul. That's why the eyes are called the windows to the soul. If you can look beyond looking, you will meet the soul. And then you are meeting actually another part of yourself in drag being two. So here we are. Here we is. Here I is. Ah, how does it look from here? Wow. So a very, very beautiful spiritual practice is the practice of just seeing the beloved everywhere you look. Now, with some people, it is so easy to see the beloved. They just exude belovedness. Yeah. Family sometimes, friends, my pussycat. I mean, I just love my pussycat. She's 17, she's no pussycat. She's 90 years old, for God's sake. I keep telling her that, but she won't believe me. I tell her to hold on because I'm writing a book on aging. There's a great God, I wish I could find this easily. Well, we'll try just this year. There's a woman in India. Her name is Ananda Mai Ma. She was a very, very, very great being. She and my guru knew each other. They were mama and papa, sort of mata and pata. They each treated the other like the mother and the father. She was incredibly beautiful, and she had been a Bengali housewife with, you know, just being a very devoted, good housewife. And she started to flip out. And she was doing cartwheels on the lawn. I mean, she's very un-Bengali housewife-like. And she was just getting so that in our country, you'd say, well, well, let's look to the pharmacopoeia for help. But India is such a mishugana place that they just take her and they take care of her. And her husband took care of her. And they treated her with great love and respect as if she was going through a profound transformation. And she did indeed go through the transformation, and she became a being of such a presence and such depth of being and such heart that it ended up, for the last 30 years of her life, she was basically moved around from place to place, and they had tens of millions of people who would make journeys to just come and be in her presence, just to be in her presence. I mean, she was one of the greatest beings that India has known. And I remember once sitting there in a throng of maybe, I don't know, 10, 15,000 people. And she was sitting up on the dais. She was wearing white. She was then about 75, maybe. And she was singing. And she was singing repetitively. She was singing Jaya Bhagwan, which means Jaya is like hail or honor or ah. And Bhagwan is another of the names of the unnameable, of God or whatever you want to call it. And she was singing this song, and it was like she was having pillow talk with God. You can hear my pushing my metaphors a little here. And she was singing this. It sounded like, it didn't sound like this, but she was singing this. Jaya Bhagavan. Jaya Bhagavan, Jaya Bhagavan, Jaya Bhagavan, Jaya Bhagavan, Jaya Bhagavan, Jaya Bhagavan, Jaya Bhagwan, 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 Jai Bhagavan, Jai Bhagavan, Jai Bhagavan, Jai Bhagavan, Jai Bhagavan, Jai Bhagavan. And on she goes. Sometimes for hours. And what I come to ask myself is, since I know how absolutely tasty it is to have my heart open and to feel that feeling of being in love, I know how sweet it is. Why aren't I in it all the time? That probably may not interest you about your life, but it sure as hell interests me. Now, I know that the quality of what I mean when I say being in love is resting in a part of my being where love is. And I know that in my earlier years, because of the nature of my mind, I didn't have access to that place inside my own heart. And then somebody came along and I, quote, fell in love. You with me thus far? Anybody here? Yeah. Now what I mean when I said I fell in love, if I translate it from where I'm sitting now, is somebody came along who was in psychology called an innate releasing mechanism. A key stimulus came along. A key stimulus came galumphing along, right? And it was like a key that went into a lock in the door that closed to my heart. And it opened, and I was in love, right? Now, because of the way that happened, I interpreted it as I am in love with you.